Welcome to Earth Matters, environmental justice stories from so-called Australia and around the world. Produced at the studios of 3CR on Wurundjeri Woiwurrung country in Naarm, Melbourne, and broadcast across the continent via the Community Radio Network. I pay my respects to elders past and present of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung and of the many lands our content reaches. I recognise that sovereignty has never been ceded. This always was and always will be Wurundjeri Woiwurrung land. And I affirm that there can be no environmental justice without justice for First Nations people across the globe. I'm Mia Audrey.
Lag nitamun ya dainga, mamu ya waikaro. It means, this is your land, look after it. Ina malu nitamun ya dainga, mamu ya waikaro. That's your sea, that's your ocean. It is your responsibility and your obligation to look after it.
On today's show, we hear from two First Nations advocates from the front lines of the climate battle. They touch on climate change impacts in their communities, their fight to protect country, and why First Nations voices must be front and centre. Audio is taken from a panel earlier this year hosted by SEED Indigenous Youth Climate Network. Later, we'll hear from Rosaline Parker, a Pacifica advocate and cultural consultant working on climate justice initiatives in Tuvalu and Kiribati. But first, here's Kabe Tamu. He was one of eight Torres Strait Islanders who took a world-first human rights case against the Australian government for their inaction on climate change. In September 2022, the UN Human Rights Committee found that Australia is indeed violating the human rights of low-lying islanders through its failure to act, and asked Australia to compensate them, assess their needs through meaningful consultations, and take measures to continue to secure their safe existence on their respective islands. Here's Kabe on the ongoing fight to protect the islands and their communities.
Kapukubil, Nitamura, Nganel Kebe, Ngai Kulkalaik, Warber Nungapa. Good afternoon, good night to everybody tuning in. My name's Kebe Tamu. I'm from Waraba Island. I'm in the central part of the Torres Strait. I come from the Kulkalaik region and the Kulkalaik Nation, which is one of the most vulnerable places. Islands here in the Torres Strait. First of all, I'm actually joining in from the Kaiwalagal region of the Torres Strait. There's the island here, Waibeni, so I respect to the traditional owners and the elders here of the Kararik people in this area here. And I just also want to extend that to all the TOs, traditional owners, elders of the Torres Strait, and where everyone else is tuning in from. So our remote Indigenous communities and people are the most vulnerable people when it comes to climate change, but we are also the most strongest of how much our country, our seas mean for us, standing in the front line to face the impact, but we also fight together as one people of this country to challenge companies that are destroying our seas, destroying our island homes, and the impact that has on our people, our culture, our future generations. As Torres Strait Islanders, we are sometimes seen as minority within the minority in this country. So it's really important for us to get opportunities like this. I'm part of the Torres Strait 8 that launched the case back in 2018, and then we won the hearing with the United Nations Human Rights Committee, finding the Australian government for violating our rights, so human rights, our rights to culture, our rights to life, and our rights for our children. to continue to practice our rights in our island homes back in 2022 when we got that case result handed down to us. We've, you know, celebrated with that. But, you know, what I said back then is that that is just the first step for us. Since then, we've had other Torres Strait Islanders step up to the plate. As you heard before, Auntie Anne, they're talking about Rose Ilu, Uncle Paba and Uncle Paul. They took their case to the national level as well. There have been many good works that have come out of the Torres Strait. You know, we really like to be leaders, you know, when it comes to these things that impact us. And, you know, we as a country must make the right decision. And that is for us here in the Torres Strait, is to protect our people, protect our island homes, protect our culture. That is what is at the forefront of our minds, you know, moving forward the next 3 years. You know, we need a government in there that will look after our rights, look after our culture. That's what's really, really important to us. As vulnerable as we are, we see meters of our coastlines getting eroded away day in, day out. You know, when the monsoon season comes around, takes away up to 10 meters of our coastline, our islands are getting smaller. Our ancestors are getting washed away to the sea. We have to pick up our bones of our ancestors from the reefs and rebury them. You know, that continued trauma is still happening within our communities. So it's something that we don't take lightly, and how we can come together as one and, you know, fight for our future, especially our future generations coming behind us. You know, with all the reports, it doesn't look to favor us and how long we want to remain in our communities. But, you know, we're willing to do whatever we can to ensure that our future generations enjoy what we enjoyed growing up, and our cultural connection to the land, the sea, and the air remains strong. And we practice all our cultural practices for many more generations to come on our own islands. You know, I could sit here and all night and talk about the impacts that we go through. You know, you talk about our land, our sea, but how that connects to us, you know, emotionally, mentally, the impact that that has on our health as well. So, you know, that's, it's everything combines, you know, when you're talking about these islands here in the Torres Strait. And, you know, if the government continue to approve, it's going to be a massive deal for more people. We can't put off the gas when we talk about the continued damage that, you know, these companies do to our land down there. And, you know, we're always up here in the front line bearing all the impact that it has, the rising sea levels, the impact that it has on our coastlines, our reefs as well. You know, we sea country people, we live off the reef. The high cost of living up here is massive. You know, our freighting cost to get all the food up here, it's massive. So, you know, we rely heavily on the sea, but our reefs are being damaged. You know, we're getting marine heat wave going throughout the region. It's been happening for a few years now. You know, we're losing fish in our waters. You know, we notice the migration patterns going through with the birds. Our natural resources are getting scarce, and, you know, we're seeing all these impacts right here at our doorsteps, but we're not the one who, you know, we're not the one responsible for this, but yet, you know, we suffer from it. So, you know, we're always, the Torres Strait, you know, we're always there to support the First Nations people on the mainland and, you know, to work in solidarity, work together. You know, we need each other for this. Yous are at the front line defending your homelands, defending your land, your waterways, you know, as sovereign people of this land, this country. And we're up here, protecting our islands. I think for us in the Torres Strait, when you look at climate justice, it's about, the government needs to acknowledge the disproportionate impact that's happening up here. They need to acknowledge that the rising sea levels, it's happening. Our coastal erosion, our islands are getting smaller. They need to acknowledge that, ever since we won that case, they haven't come forward and acknowledged that these things are happening in our communities, the impacts it has on our people, on our culture, on our future. Those things, that's the first step, when we talk about climate justice. And they need to protect our cultural and our human rights, as Torres Strait Islanders with a deep spiritual and cultural connection and affiliation, and the responsibility and the obligations that we have to continue to protect and preserve our island homes, our communities, our culture, and our identity. We've been given that by birthright, to continue to protect and preserve our communities, our islands, our culture, so that our future generation can continue to practice it. That's just our way of life, and how we live up here. Continue to push for more actions, with the Torres Strait Aid, with the other cases that have come forward. It's something that we are really proud of, especially with the mix of elders and young people as well. And I think one of the most important ones is that, we ensure that our voice leads the way. Our Indigenous people, our First Nations people, the ones that who have managed, who have protected our land, our seas, our rivers for thousands of years, that their voices are heard. They're the ones sitting on the table, making decisions, influencing policy decision, influencing reforms that happens in the government space. So it's really important for us, especially in the Torres Strait. We've come from outstanding leaders that have led the way, that have reforms that have happened prior to us even being recognized as citizens of this country. You talk about people that have changed the fishing industry for us up here in the 1936 maritime strike, where they said, we're not working anymore, we want equal pay. They went on a strike, and that's how our governance was formed up here. That's how they gave us more control. So, and then you move on from there, the World War, where our soldiers, they went on to fight for this country that they weren't recognized as citizen. Once again, they stood up and fought for their rights, fought for equal pay. And then you come along to people like Eddie Marble, Eddie Marble, who fought for, our native title and our connection and our, getting rid of Terra Nullius. And then now in this climate space where we have, these leaders in this space now fighting against the government to continue to protect our vulnerable communities, our beautiful ancient cultures and practices. I think for us, that's how we see climate justice for us. Really important to listen to us as First Nations people of this country, of these seas, of these waterways, these rivers. We've looked after it for many years. So I think that's something that's really important. And, one of the quotes that I always use, my late grandfather, he always used it when he's talking publicly, but even when he sits down, when he always sat down with me and we have conversations, he always used this quote. He would say it in Lech. He would say, "Lag nitamu nyadainga mamu yawaikaru." It means, this is your land, look after it. And about the sea, he would say also, "Inamalu nitamu nyadainga mamu yawaikaru." That's your sea, that's your ocean. It is your responsibility and your obligation to look after it. Our responsibility and our obligation to our people, to our land, sea, air, it doesn't stop, it doesn't change. You know, we continue to stand together, stand united, stand at the forefront of climate change, and, you know, fight for climate justice for our people and, more importantly, for our future generations. And our campaign, I would also like to, you know, see a lot of support behind a lot of the legal cases that are still going on in the Torres Strait. And, you know, I like to see people get shared out on social media. There's a decision that's going to be handed down, I think, soon. And also our island, our home campaign is still running. And we're looking for support as well as we're really getting our next generation up and running so they can, you know, continue the fight. We have our island ambassador program that's currently going on as well. You know, so show some support, show some love for your brothers and sisters all the way up here in the Torres Strait Islands, the gateway to Australia. Thank you.
Kabe Tamu, Torres Strait advocate, calling for solidarity with the low-lying islands at the front lines of climate change. You're listening to Earth Matters, Community Radio's National Environmental Justice Program. We're hearing stories from First Nations communities at the front lines of the climate crisis. Next up, Rosaline Parker, a Pacifica advocate and cultural consultant based in Western Sydney, whose work includes empowering young Pacific leaders to engage in meaningful advocacy, as well as climate justice initiatives in Tuvalu and Kiribati.
Salofa lava, everyone. My name is Rosaline, but everyone calls me Rose. I'm a proud Pacifica woman. My genealogy stretches across the vast Pacifica Moana, but I've mainly been brought up in the Samoan culture. Born in Tamaki Makaurau, Aotearoa, but very much raised in Western Sydney, very proud Western Sydney residents. So I guess I find that as someone that has a shared identity, I represent communities that are often overlooked, communities that are often spoken about, but never really spoken to or consulted with. So it's an honour to be here to share my perspective, firstly, as a Pacifica woman living within the diaspora. So, I mean, of course, Australia often paints themselves as, you know, the big brother to the Pacific region, right? And a lot of the actions and the decisions that are made here impact what happens across the Pacific, especially in the face of the climate crisis. So it's really important for me to share my concerns in order to protect the future of our Pacific Islands. As well as being a person that lives in the Western suburbs, I also see firsthand how rising temperatures and the cost of living are affecting our communities here. With the introduction of the different visa schemes, such as the Pacific Engagement Visa and Falipili Union Treaty, I can see many more of our Pacific Islanders coming over to live in communities such as Western Sydney, where we have the largest Pacifica population in New South Wales. So, you know, it's really devastating to know that people will be moving from climate impacted communities to another climate impacted community as well. And that's why I'm here to share a perspective that reflects the realities of my community, both here and across the region as well. It's no secret that our Pacific Islands contribute very little to the climate crisis, but we are paying the highest price with interest, I would say. I mean, through my work, I work closely with communities in Tuvalu and Kiribati, our low-lying atoll nations in the Pacific. And similar to what Auntie mentioned before, right? If you have never seen that impact, if you're sitting comfortably within your home in the city, obviously it's very hard to have that connection and understanding. So I was in Kiribati just a couple of weeks ago, actually. And as soon as you get off the plane, you know, you see the impacts, you see the rising sea levels, you see families becoming displaced, not being able to live in their villages anymore. You know, I remember showering in brackish water. And for me, I was shocked. You know, this is the reality of these amazing, humble people. They never complain. They just keep going. And how unfair that is. I mean, to contribute absolutely nothing to this, yet to be experiencing those impacts that impact on livelihoods, I remember walking from one side of the island to the other. So when I walked through within the first hour, the ocean was at ankle height. And then I had to walk through again to get to the other side of the island an hour later. And it was literally waist high. It's crazy how fast the ocean rises, especially in Kiribati. They really like seafood, fish. That's their main source of income, and also very yummy food that us island people love to eat. But of course, now because of the impacts of climate change, fishermen have to go further away, and they don't always come back, unfortunately. So I guess for me, the way that this makes our communities feel, and I know for me personally, if you look at it in a day-to-day context, right? If someone steals from you, there's a consequence. If someone hurts you, there's a consequence. But I think if I think like with what we're experiencing with the fossil fuel projects, it's like, sorry to say this, but it's like dying a slow death, the fact that governments and corporations don't take into consideration, the lives of our people, here in Australia and across the Pacific, and Indigenous communities across the world. And it's really psychologically distressing, because how come, someone with money's existence is more important than ours? When we have been looking after our lands and seas for thousands of years. When I talk about climate justice, especially our youth here in the diaspora, I generally just focus on three things because I know that it's quite a big topic. But I guess firstly is recognition. So recognizing the importance of the connections that First Nations, Pacifica, and all Indigenous peoples across the planet have with land and sea, and also addressing the root causes of climate change, like understanding colonialism, systemic inequality, and extractive economies throughout history. There's been many times where I've gone to even grassroots events here in Sydney that are climate justice focused or Pacific climate change focused, and there's no Pacific people in the room at all. And it's like always a discussion about our people and how we can help the Pacific people, but not understanding the connections that we have within our own communities and in our own context, that we probably know what's best for our own communities. So that leads me to the second concept of consultation, working collaboratively in a genuine way, making sure that there's co-design, and especially, in terms of climate change policy, I know in some Pacific countries, a lot of it has been adopted from, overseas consultants, very Eurocentric policies that do not reflect our communities and what our communities need. So it's really important to consult with Pacific and First Nations communities, especially in the lead up of this COP31 that I really hope is here in Australia. We have to make sure that it's really genuine and authentic. A lot of the time, when the Pacific has hosted things in the past, of course, I know our people wanted the absolute best, but we get lost in the performative ways of culture, only wanting our communities to come to do a song and dance, but not really having us at the table. And I mean, having obviously the decision makers from the Pacific, but also the grassroots, everyone here that's doing all this amazing work, we really need to be spearheading that COP31. So hopefully it is here. And also finally, I just wanted to touch on resourcing. It's really sad, especially for a lot of our more remote, and I'm speaking about the more Pacific context, but the remote communities. A lot of the time, climate resilience efforts are driven by, our church communities, our women. These are not formally set up entities, and it's really sad that a lot of the climate finance, it has to go through like a kind of like a tunnel. You know, there's so many stops as well because it's a very westernized system, westernized financial systems that do not work for our communities. So it's really important in order to achieve climate justice, you know, the resources need to be put in the hands of our communities. They shouldn't have to do a song and dance to access it. But yeah, I really wanted to share that because it's really sad. You know, it's easy to extract from our economies, but it's not hard to give back to those who are suffering from the actions of others. Oh, sorry, guys. I just realized like we've been doing all this talking and crying, and I didn't even share about the work that I do. So I'll just make it real quick. So I actually am the Project Partnerships and Community Engagement Officer at Edmund Rice Centre, based here in Sydney, working primarily on Pacific climate advocacy programs, and doing a whole heap of work as well in the local context around climate mobility as well. So, I guess as part of my work, we have a partnership with the Tuvalu Climate Action Network and the Fusiolofu Association, the only association for people living with a disability in Tuvalu. We are accepting donations for our beach cleaning activities. So just like environmentally friendly bags and gloves would be really helpful. But also we're on Facebook as well if you wanted to follow that journey. And I'd love to connect with you all for, sometime in the future. Thank you.
Rosaline Parker on the work of supporting Pacific climate warriors on the ground and from afar. You've been listening to Earth Matters, Community Radio's National Environmental Justice Program. I'm Mia Audrey. Today on the show, we heard from First Nations leaders in the climate justice movement. We heard about the disproportionate impacts island communities are facing and the imperative to protect what's left. If you'd like to engage further, the full version of this webinar is available online, and I will post the link on the show notes to this episode at 3cr.org.au/earthmatters. You will also find links to the work of SEED, who hosted the webinar, the Our Islands, Our Home campaign to protect the Torres Strait Islands from climate change, and the Tuvalu Climate Action Network. Earth Matters would like to thank the Community Broadcasting Foundation for their financial support and the Community Radio Network for getting the program out to you. Earth Matters is produced in the studios of 3CR, NAM, Melbourne. That's all for now, but tune in next week for more environmental and social justice stories.
I'm Jeffrey.
I'm Alphonse.
I'm Erwin.
And we are from the Voice of West Papua.
Tuesday 6:30 until 7:30 p.m.
News and music from West Papua.
Kefirs are Palestinian scarves, and they're a symbol of support for justice for the Palestinian people. From the traditional black and white kefir to an array of modern designs, explore the range and order online or drop by 3CR during business hours. Wear your support for the rights of Palestinians. Go to kefirs.org.au, that's kefirs.org.au. A 3CR supporter.
Friends of the Earth Food Co-op is open. Get fresh produce and support local farmers and keep our grassroots community thriving through these unusual times. Organic veggie boxes and click and collect now available. Visit www.foefood.org/click collect to place your orders. or pop in store at 312 Smith Street and see how we're adapting with our new physical distancing layout. Shop organic and buy local. Made easy at Friends of the Earth. A proud 3CR supporter.